Give me one sec. My binder is so big, it ruins my whole setup here. It's really embarrassing.
Stefania Bell is ESPN's injury analyst, a physical therapist, and the co-host of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast.
The mental image I have of just the sheer towering amount of paper you're surrounded by.
I actually have this huge 4-inch COVID-19 binder with tabs for every league and just the COVID literature that I've consumed and the CDC requirements. I've got notes and stickies, and I feel like if I were in one of those CSI stories, this would be my wall with the thumbtacks and the rubber bands.
Red yarn connecting all sorts of theories and possibilities.
That sounds about right.
Updates about COVID-19's impact on sports are flowing in constantly, along with research that deepens our understanding of this virus. As athletes look ahead to fall, and yes, that's you, football, they're eyeing the latest from teams that have returned to play. So what do players have to go on as they decide whether to return to the field? ESPN's Stefania Bell weighs the consequences from an athlete's point of view. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, August 4th. This is ESPN Daily. Stefania, hello.
Pablo, how are you?
I'm all right. We wanted to talk to you specifically today because all those binders of league protocols and medical studies you have, they're a big deal right now, to put it mildly, right?
No kidding. The binder gets thicker by the hour, Pablo.
So for the NFL, I mean, their players face a deadline to opt into the 2020 season or opt out, and they're making that decision as we're watching Major League Baseball face dozens of players and staff testing positive for coronavirus. Full disclosure, you and I are talking on Monday afternoon, and there are a ton of moving parts. So how would you describe the decisions that NFL players and the league are faced with right now, given the latest developments around this virus?
You know, Pablo, I think this is going to be the story of the season. Things will adapt and change in response to information that is learned. I mean, there's a wide range between what's happening in the NBA, where they've had zero positive tests inside the bubble. We've got the NHL reporting as of today that through week one of phase four, over 7,000 tests and zero positive results, to MLB having an entirely different scenario with a couple of what you might call outbreaks between the Marlins and the Cardinals.
All right, turning now to a developing story out of baseball. St. Louis's four-game series with the Detroit Tigers is officially postponed. This is in the wake of 13 positive COVID-19 tests among members of the Cardinals organization.
If you're an NFL player, you're taking this all in as you're entering your facility for a training camp.
So for the NFL players, I mean, this is changing by the second, by the minute. But how many players have said they're not going to take part in this season so far, and why?
Well, as of earlier today, I believe the number was at 43, and I expect that number could still go up because the league and the NFLPA are still finalizing their language as far as all of the various protocols will go. Originally, the deadline for opting out was said to be 7 days after that language was agreed upon.
Yeah, that target has moved around a lot. And actually, now our Adam Schefter is saying officially that the deadline is Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. So in terms of the factors from the social to the scientific, what's impacting NFL players' decisions here?
I think it's a combination of things. There's certainly worries about how the virus might impact the player directly. And if you look at NFL players, between the fact that there's a large African-American community within the NFL, that some of the risk factors associated with more compromise with COVID-19, like a high BMI, body mass index, there are a number of players that fit into that category. There are a couple of players who are dealing with diabetes issues, any lung conditions. These are all things that for each player, they have to weigh individually. And then, of course, it's not just them. Unlike teams that are going into a bubble, the players are living at home primarily and going to and from their facilities. And that potentially puts family members at risk. So players are evaluating whether they want to bring that risk to their family. And I think in the NFL, there's actually a positional component to this too. If you look at the players who've opted out so far, there's quite a large number that are on the offensive and defensive line. And when you think about who is the closest contact to a non-teammate, if you will, in a competitive situation, it's the guys on the line. So, you know, that hasn't been overtly stated, but I think it's something you could infer based on who's opted out so far.
I had never considered that, but that is fascinating. I remember, Stefania, like those old NFL films videos in the cold, you'd see the linemen breathing out and you'd see it because of the cold highlighting that warm air from inside their bodies. And now I think if they are positive, I mean, that's the, I mean, literally the first line of defense.
Well, as you are aware, the NFL and the NFLPA have been working with Oakley on a face shield that would be attached to the helmet that could potentially help prevent with some of that spread through the aerosols. But they haven't been able to test it because the teams haven't been together. So as of now, all 32 clubs have been shipped samples of these face shields, and players will be testing it out during training camp, providing feedback for the engineers. This is something that wouldn't be mandatory, but I certainly think that people are hopeful that a number of players will find it comfortable enough to try out in the hope that it's one more thing to potentially combat the risk of exposure.
So much of this is about trying these experiments for the first time. And for the NFL, as you alluded to, baseball, to their benefit, has been the first non-bubble experiment that we've seen. So the NFL is planning this restart that is a lot like MLB's. It's not a bubble. Players are traveling. Several more positive cases have been springing up around baseball since the Marlins outbreak in St. Louis, most notably. So what's the tally for baseball right now?
Really, it's unknown because, in fact, there's been numbers that have been fluctuating in terms of whether the tests have been positive or inconclusive. I think it's really hard to grasp a number right now. I think the more important note is that there are a couple of teams, the Marlins and the Cardinals, who have had an outbreak within the team. Double-digit numbers as of today. Jeff Passan telling us that the St. Louis Cardinals have 13 people in their organization who have tested positive. This was something that baseball was waiting to see, because if the Marlins were just one team that had it, and they've sort of adapted the protocols now, they've got some additional pieces in place to try and become more strict in a hope to not face a similar situation. But to have a second team that has these numbers is definitely concerning. But in my exchanges with Jeff Passan today, it sounds as if, even though baseball hasn't made a statement yet, that their plan is to forge ahead and hope that the things that they've put in place from here forward will help. Really, it comes down to everybody being as vigilant as they can be and knowing that even with all the best practices in place, you still can't stop a highly contagious virus from getting to someone. But I think what the NFL is focused on, and I think the MLB has to really hone in on this, is stopping spread.
If you're not comfortable as a baseball player, you have the option to not continue playing the season. I mean, players have been opting out. Lorenzo Cain on the Milwaukee Brewers is one of those players. He played 5 games, and now he's leaving for the season after consulting his family. Yoenis Cespedes, in what was a truly confusing situation for the Mets, an epically messy scenario where he seemed to be missing, but then later said by way of his agent that he's actually opting out due to concerns around coronavirus. I mean, we haven't heard any fines or punishments for that. Presumably, they do forego pay, but that situation won't be the same for NFL players. What happens if players in football decide to leave after the season starts?
I think that's going to be handled on a case-by-case basis. And again, as of right now, when we're recording this, that language is still being finalized. But my understanding from early conversations is that once a player opts out for the season, that decision is irrevocable. There's no opting back in. If a player decides to opt in for the season, there really is no opting out unless something changes. If there's a new diagnosis for a risk factor for that player, or if a family member develops an illness and is suddenly at higher risk, those are variables that could justify a later opt-out. But I think these situations are going to be handled on a case-by-case basis.
Stefania, even though these are mostly very healthy young people, there is evidence now that getting the virus can have serious consequences for an athlete. So let's talk about the case of Red Sox pitcher Eduardo Rodriguez.
Season over for Red Sox ace Eduardo Rodriguez before he even threw out a single pitch as a result of complications from his coronavirus diagnosis.
He had tested positive for coronavirus, and since then, he's been diagnosed with a heart condition that is likely connected to the novel coronavirus, and he's only 27. What is his diagnosis, and what was your reaction when you heard about that news?
His diagnosis is myocarditis, or inflammation of the heart muscle, and this was actually a documented concern back as early as April for athletes who may have been impacted by COVID-19. There was a paper that was published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. One of the authors, Jonathan Dresner, is a sports cardiologist in Washington, also a team physician for University of Washington Huskies and for the Seattle Seahawks. They put together a document warning, if you will, everyone that they were seeing the potential for cardiac pathology associated with COVID-19. Now, the most vulnerable to cardiac pathology were those people who were severely ill with the coronavirus. But what they also noticed was that even in cases where there was mild illness or folks who were asymptomatic, there was still the potential for this silent myocardial inflammation. Therefore, their recommendation was for all competitive athletes returning to sport, they should undergo cardiac screening. So the good news is that Eduardo Rodriguez went through this testing and the inflammation was identified. He has now been shut down for the remainder of the season, which isn't a surprise because you're usually talking multiple months for it to resolve. The good news is they expect a full resolution. But I think it serves as a reminder that here's a young, healthy athlete with what has been found to be a possible consequence of being infected and having COVID-19.
Coming up, more on what's in store for sports that are not going to enter the bubble life, namely football.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Stefania, the NFL plan for its restart is most like Major League Baseball's in that it's not a bubble. It involves players traveling between cities, and it could even involve some fans in some cities as things currently stand. So how would you describe the NFL's health and safety strategy at their actual team facilities?
The facility strategy is remarkably detailed. Everyone feels very good about all the measures in place to protect the facility. When players reported recently they had to go through multiple tests and get multiple negative results in order to even be able to access the facility. Once they're inside, many of these clubs have added touchless doors where it's either facial recognition or there's a video screen that allows you into the building. There are temperature scans and health questionnaires that are being required throughout. And there are plexiglass partitions in places that didn't used to have them, for example, in locker rooms, in meeting rooms. The other thing is that there will be these devices that folks will wear that beep if you get into too close a proximity, if you are closer than 6 feet, for example. There's also electronic data gathering bands that folks will wear, which will be able to be utilized for contact tracing in the event that someone tests positive. So they've really gone to great lengths to try and set up the facility in ways that will be as safe as possible.
In college football, officials with the SEC conference were actually recorded in a call with players, and this was obtained by the Washington Post. And those officials were saying that they can't protect everyone from the coronavirus.
We're never going to be 100%. There are going to be outbreaks, and we're going to have positive cases on every single team in the SEC. That's a given.
How is the view of positive cases changing across sports? And if we're accepting that there will be some positive cases, is there a sense as to how many is unacceptable?
There's no hard line with numbers for anything when it comes to this virus. And to be fair, every professional league who has returned athletes or who in the NFL was about to return athletes to play understands this. We are not going to eliminate the virus 100%. They expect there to be positive cases here and there. I think every league anticipated that there was the chance, there is the chance for someone to become infected or multiple someone's. So the key was always, what will you do in the case of positive tests to help mitigate the risk of spread? Because the outbreak, the mass infection, is what you're trying to avoid. And that really mirrors what we're talking about in the community outside of sports. I think the challenge at college is so different from the NFL because of the campus environment. It's college. I saw the reporting from that audio clip and that the college athletes were asking some very good questions.
Why have students been allowed to come back on campus if we're trying to have a football season? Like, I got four classes a week, all of them in class, all of them 2.5 hours long, and like, these students don't have nothing to lose by getting COVID.
Like, even if we do everything right, what happens when we go to class with some of our schoolmates who may not be doing the same things to be vigilant about their behavior like we are?
You also do a ton of reporting on player injuries. So what kind of injury risk are we talking about now across all these sports? When you combine all this hiatus, months and months of hiatus for players, and then them jumping right back into games that actually matter because we have these shortened seasons.
The NFL has various subcommittees under their health and safety committee, and they study injury patterns and try to identify areas for improvement. Some of the most impactful injuries in the NFL in terms of lost time for players have to do with these lower extremity soft tissue injuries, things ranging from ankle sprains and high ankle sprains to knee ligament injuries, ACLs, to hamstring strains. And what they found is that there is typically a pattern in training camp where around the second week of camp, these injuries tend to spike. The sense is that when you have a ramp up in volume and intensity of activity, that's where the most injury risk lies. It was very important to the Players Association and the players to have adequate ramp up time coming into this unusual season. The lack of preseason games is a bit of a victory on that front in that it gives the players more time to adapt to football activity. The flip side of that, however, is that without any games where you're really going 100% in terms of full contact, and you're really going all out in terms of max effort, we won't see that until we get to the first week of the season. So there are a lot of questions for folks about, will that present an increased injury risk in the first couple weeks of the season? The answer, honestly, is we really don't know because we've never seen anything like this before.
Stefania, this is such an unprecedented situation for all of these leagues. And it can feel like the administrators, the people in power, that they feel lost, given how confusing everything is. So how are you feeling about all of this? Because you're the injury expert, but there is such chaos around all of this at every level.
That's how I'm feeling. It's hard, right? It's hard for me, who is just a person trying to learn as much information as I can all the time, to stay on top of it, because the information evolves and changes just like this virus. Every few days, every few weeks, as we learn more, we know how to engage better. We know how to function better in its presence, but we also can't control everyone's individual behavior. And individual behavior is a key to getting this under control.
Well, to end on a positive note here, I think I heard your new office mate in the background of your answer. So who is that?
That is Rico. He is my rescue puppy. He will be a year old in about 10 days.
Aww.
And he was just letting us know that he's been really good for a long time, and he thinks we should be done soon.
Well, you know, I was going to say, if you ever want to use the excuse, I feel like my dog ate my testing protocol paperwork, might be a reasonable thing for you to play the next time we do this.
He has been known to shred some documents, I'm not going to lie.
Well, it's clearly a feast in your office right now, so we will let you go, Stefania. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Pablo. Thanks for having me.
Ahead on ESPN Daily, we follow up with Adelaide Avila, a Staples Center employee who has been without work for 5 months.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. When sports first came to a screeching halt all the way back in March, we spoke to Adelaide Avila, a cashier who works at Staples Center in Los Angeles, to hear about the pandemic's impact on her and the thousands of arena workers in similar situations. Now, it's August and the return of sports is underway. And while games without fans and empty stadiums may feel shockingly familiar inside our living rooms, those thousands of arena workers are still without work. I checked in with Adelaide to see where things stand now. So back in March, you just learned that you'd be out of a job for at least the rest of this NBA season. So how have things been for you since then?
It's actually been pretty crazy. I'm actually upset now. Want to go back to work. I know the NBA season is starting, and unfortunately, we won't be there, you know, so it's a little heartbreaking. I miss Staples Center. I miss the whole atmosphere of the people that come through there that we're able to meet. I just really miss my job. honestly. I miss my job. I mean, I'm keeping myself occupied, but I would much rather be at work.
Do you feel kind of forgotten as the NBA enthusiasm is ramping up?
Kind of. You know, it's like nobody's even thinking about us. Nobody's thinking about the thousands of people that lost their jobs because these teams aren't actually playing in their arenas.
What has your income looked like since March?
Well, my income is what I'm getting from unemployment. And that's another frustration because our government is talking about, you know, there's people that's making more money on unemployment. They don't want to go back to work. Well, that's not me. I'll go back to work right now. But unfortunately, I can't do that. And I also have to be cautious because I take care of my mom. My mother is 76 years old, and I don't want to get her sick either. You know, right now I have my granddaughter that's 10 years old. And my little nephews, and I don't want to get them sick either, you know? So it's like, what do you do?
We heard a lot before about some owners and teams and individual players who were donating funds to help arena and stadium workers like yourself. Have you seen anything come from those efforts?
Yes, back when our building first got shut down, I mean, the owners and the team came together and they paid us throughout the rest of the season. But I mean, the season is over now, so we're not making any money from that, you know? So it's kind of difficult because the only income that we're able to get is what we get from unemployment.
How long does your unemployment benefit last? Do you have any sense of how long you'll have it?
I have money up until, I believe, either September or October. And after that, I don't know what's going to happen.
Is that currently enough to cover the bills you have?
Absolutely not. My car note, my insurance, my rent, that eats up most of my money. So for my other bills, I just have to pay what I can when I can.
Who has been the biggest help and comfort to you during what has been a difficult time?
Actually, my family. You know, just being there and uplifting my spirits. And it just seems like everybody's talking about everything else. You know, they're talking about people going back to work. And my thought process is, how are we going to get back to work? Even if people do go back to work, that doesn't necessarily mean us, because we work in a venue where there's thousands and thousands of people that go to that venue. So we're not going to be going back to work anytime soon. Not the way how they're talking about this pandemic is going. I mean, there's really no comfort. The only comfort I'm going to have is when I'm able to go back to work freely and be at my job to earn my income. Another thing is our health insurance. Our union is covering up until August, but what's going to happen to us after August? Like, what if I get sick? What am I supposed to do? Without a job, perhaps without health insurance, what am I supposed to do then?
You had told us the last time about what you were hearing from your coworkers in your role as a union rep. How have the past few months played out for the people you work with?
I mean, they want to get back to work. I just had a few of our members call me a couple of days ago, worried about their health insurance. They want to know what's going to happen once August passes, because it doesn't look like we're going to go back to work for the rest of this year. So people are worried. They want to know what's going to happen to them and their families. Are they going to get put out in the street? How are they going to feed their families? You know, how are they going to take care of their health if need be? So, I mean, nobody really have answers to these questions, but these are the questions that people are asking and people are concerned.
So in terms of next season or future games eventually returning to Staples Center, there's no clarity that you have on that issue yet?
No, the only thing that is a bit of good news is that they did put on the calendar two concerts that's coming up. So I see that as a positive sign that hopefully, I know the NBA is supposed to start back up in December for the new season, but I don't know what that's going to look like for us. If they're going to have some fans in the building or, I mean, right now, we don't really know.
So the NBA is just starting games again in the Orlando bubble, and the National Hockey League is starting their bubble tournament in Canada. Are you going to be watching any of these games?
Most definitely, because I love the Lakers, and I'm going to be watching all the games because I have nothing else to do at this point.
And what are you going to be thinking as you watch these games that you love so much without fans and without the arena staffers like you?
Praying to God that this pandemic get over soon and that we're able to get back to some type of normalcy.
Adelaide, thank you so much for your time. This has been really enlightening.
No problem.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.